Senate will come to order. Roll call by the chief clerk.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 18th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Excused.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
DeCaria. Here.
Dockstader.
Excused.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Excused.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Excused.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Here.
Townsend.
Excused.
Here.
Vasey.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
Case, here.
Case present.
Landon, here.
Landon present. Nicholas present. 29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Reverend Robinson.
Good morning once again. Let us pray. Gracious God, whose grace redeems all things, whose justice brings peace, whose love extends beyond all boundaries, we thank you this day for the people who have become a part of our lives, for those for whom we have found an immediate affinity, for they bring freshness to our lives, joy to our spirits, and love to our hearts. We thank you also for those we have not particularly liked, for those who are very different from us, for they have challenged us to listen intentionally, understand deeply, and think differently. We thank you for those whom we have yet to meet, for we know that each encounter has the potential to reveal more about what it means to live in community. Because of our gratitude for all your people, we lift up all those who suffer from illness or injury, for those who fear from uncertainty and change, those who feel the pain of loneliness and loss. We seek your grace for ourselves as well, for we are people unfinished in your work of creation. We pause this moment to give you thanks for all these people and for your relationship with us. We who are privileged to be loved by you, we seek your blessing not only for ourselves but for all the world. Hear our prayer. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading corrections and approval of the journal. Would the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, the Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 17th, 2009, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. There is no doctor scheduled today. Nurses for the day are Jan Cruz from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center and Kathy Vasco, Youth Challenge Program. Welcome. Yeah. Thought for the day, life is like a dog sled team. If you aren't the lead dog, the scenery never changes. Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. If you haven't seen him yet, back there in the corner is one of my first chairmen, sitting right next to the other first chairman. And I hope that if you haven't got to say hello to Senator Bill Hawks, you join me now and welcome him to Senate.
Welcome, Senator. You know, you could stay around and visit up for a couple of weeks. You don't have to go back to Arizona. Okay, the next order of business is concurrences. Senator Geis, are you ready for message 308, we'll have the reading clerk read that in.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 308, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 8, Feral Livestock. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, message number 308, concurrence on Senate File 08, Feral Livestock. I would move that we do concur with the House on their amendments, and I'd ask you to vote no. What they did there is we had a seven-day notice. You had to pick up your livestock if you owned it in 7 days, and they moved it up to 3 days, and I think that's just a little too quick. So I'd ask we see if we can go get our heads together and see if we can work out a compromise maybe on 5 days or 7 days, but 3 days is pretty short notice.
Okay, the motion the Senate do not... The Senate do concur on Senate File 8, and that the Senator recommend that you vote no. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
Excuse.
Esquibel?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Excuse.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions? Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 28 no's, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File number 8. The conference committee will be Geis, Chairman, Basie and Johnson. Senator Burns, are you ready on message 309?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 309, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 11, State Parks Ranger Authority. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 12. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence on Senate File 11, State Parks Ranger Authority, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, the amendments they added simply put the word be. As you recall, the bill extends ranger park ranger authority to archaeological sites and historic sites, and they simply added the word state before each of them. It actually clarifies the bill. In those rare instances, they actually improved it. So I ask the body to vote aye on the concurrence.
They took out the conflict resolution.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 11 and vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader excused. Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas excused. Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 24 ayes, 4 noes, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 11. Senator Geis, are you ready for message number 316?
Yes, sir.
Reading clerk will please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 316, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File Number 31, Brucellosis Surveillance Program 2. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 4. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, on message 316, Senate File 31, Brucellosis Surveillance Program 2, I would move that message 316 do pass, and I'd ask the body to vote aye. What they did is on page 2, line 3, well, on page 1, line 3, after vaccination, insert modifying compensation rates. Then on page 2, line 3, after Wyoming, insert compensation under the program for all purposes except mandated testing shall be pursuant to the terms of the livestock herd plan that has been entered in between the livestock producer and the Wyoming State veterinarian. And what they're talking about there is if your herd's condemned, why, you have to have a plan of how you're going to dispose of that herd, or if you're going to fence them in and try to clean them up. So, and then on page 2, line 7, they change $3.50 down to $1.50, and it goes up to as much as $8 for pay for vaccination. And that's what they did. And so I'd ask you to vote aye on message 316.
Chief Clerk, call the roll.
And Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
DeCaria.
Aye.
Dockstader excused. Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson. Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas excused. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 1 no, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 31. Senator Geis, are you ready on message 317? Intentional feeding of elk.
Yes, sir.
Reading clerk, please end read the message. Read.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 317, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file number 36, intentional feeding of elk. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 45, noes 15. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, message 317 on Senate File 36, intentional feeding of elk. I would move message 317 and ask you to vote aye. On page 2, line 8, they deleted taking elk as provided. And then on page 2, line 9, deleted Wyoming Statute 23-17005J and the OR. And then on page 2, line 16, 17, they deleted those two entirely and then put in a little V. Any feeding of elk outside of a brucellosis surveillance area designated pursuant to Wyoming Livestock Board rules and regulations. Then on page 2, line 19, after A, insert first violation of this section constitutes a low misdemeanor punishable as provided in Wyoming Statute 23-6-020A, little v. A second or subsequent fine then goes higher. And that's what they did on that, and I'd ask you to vote aye on message 317.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 36 and vote aye.
Mr. President.
Oh, excuse me. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, what's the significance of the change on page 2, lines 16 and 17, where they're putting in any feeding of elk outside designated brucellosis surveillance area? What's the significance of that change?
Livestock Board has rules and regulations on commingling of livestock, and that would you would not be penalized if elk come in on your feed ground and ate with your livestock.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 36 and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson,
aye.
Bebout,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
DeCaria,
aye.
Dockstader excused, Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas excused, Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 36. Senator Case, are you ready on message number 320?
I am, Mr. President.
Okay, with the reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 320, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File Number 70, Loss of Firearms Rights Protections. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, noes 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you very much. I would move message number 320 to Senate File 70. Mr. President, this is the bill that dealt with advising defendants of their potential loss of firearms rights when they're in court, and also provided that the public defender's office would provide an attorney if it was so warranted in the case. Mr. President, the House liked the bill. The only thing they did was to change the enactment clause from July 1 to immediately. You might think that this makes somewhat of a problem, but we checked with members of the judiciary, and since most of the courts already do everything that's required in this bill, it seemed they felt that the immediate effective date would be fine, not a problem at all. I'd ask you to vote aye.
Okay. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 70 and that you vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout. Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Dockstader excused, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Nicholas excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Schiffer, Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 70. Senator Perkins, are you ready on message number 321?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 321, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 86, Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, noes 1. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I'd move message 321, concurrence request to Senate File 86, Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, and request that the body vote no. What they did in this was they went back, and there's a certain number of provisions in there regarding coroners and the interaction with the agency procurement or the Oregon procurement agencies. What they did is they stripped out most of those provisions that would provide an incentive for coroners and these procurement organizations to develop mutually agreed upon protocols. They stripped that out, and ultimately I think it will result in more harm than good if we get in turf battles over these things. What I'd like to do, is, Mr. Chairman, is to have you appoint a good committee. We'll go down there and work this out and come to some middle ground that I think is there and is available, and we can move this good bill forward without the damage done. Again, request that you vote no. Thank you, Mr. President.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 86, and you're asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson,
no.
Bebout,
no.
Burns,
no.
Case,
no.
Coe,
no.
Cooper,
no.
DeCaria,
no.
Dockstader excused, Esquibel,
no.
Geis,
no.
Hastert,
no.
Honeycutt,
no.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
here.
Larson,
no.
Martin,
no.
Massey,
no.
Meyer, Nicholas excused, Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No. No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 no's, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 86. The conference committee will be Perkins, Chair, Ross, and DeCarey. Okay, Senator Geis, are you ready on message 315?
Yes, sir.
Reading clerk will please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 315, concurrence requested. Mr. President, the Senate file number 21, subdivisions located within irrigation districts. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 54, noes 6. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, message number 315, Senate File 21, subdivision located within irrigation districts. I would move message 315 and ask you to vote no, because on page 2, line 22, after with insert the boundaries of, and then on the first part on page 1, line 4, they took out requesting they plan to reduce additional burden risk on liability created by the subdivision. We need to talk to them about that one. And then on page 3, top of from line 1 to line 8, they completely removed all that part. So I think we need to have a committee go down and find out why they took those out. And I'd ask you to vote no on message 315.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 21, and you're asked to vote no. Chief Clerk, please call the vote roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader excused. Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas excused. Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie? Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 no's, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 21. The conference committee is Jennings, Chair, Cooper, and Meyer. House bill on first reading. House bill 1, first reading of the bill.
House bill number 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriation, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 41, noes 12, excused 7.
Pursuant to Joint Rules 14-1E1, House Bill 1 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports from standing committees.
February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 8, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 176, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
House Bill 176, X-ray, or B, X-ray equipment has appropriations and need to be reassigned to committee number 2.
Without objections, House Bill 176 will be referred to committee number 2, appropriations.
February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 237, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Sessions, Noes, Senator Perkins, and Ross, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 297, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. House Bill 2, second reading of the House Bill.
Street rod and custom vehicles.
House Bill 2, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 6, second reading of the House Bill.
Game and fish trapping.
House Bill 6, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 10, second reading of the House Bill.
Subdivisions requirements.
House Bill 10, there is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 10, second reading amendment number 1 to substitute bill number 1. Delete the Scott B. Bout Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move amendment number 1, second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 10. Mr. President, what this memorandum, what this amendment does is it goes and it kind of merges the concept that the good senators who proposed the Committee of the Whole Amendment had in there. Ultimately, if you recall back a year ago, we extended to county commissioners the ability to deal and put in the size of what would be large acre tracts. We were right now, or previously it was 35 acres. We allowed the county commissioners to set the ability to govern large acre subdivisions between 35 to 140 acres. It just seemed to me as we go about doing this, and we should have done this in some earlier legislation we went through here, ultimately what we should do is we probably have to tie that to whatever that large acre tract subdivision is. And so if it's 35 acres, if the county commissioners haven't done anything, it would be 35 acres. If some county made it 80 acres, then it would be tied to 80 acres. If some county went all the way to 140 acres, then it would be tied to 140 acres. It just seemed to me that ultimately we end up with, this is just provided from uniformity in dealing with these large acre tract subdivisions that are out there, and so that we wouldn't have to necessarily have conflicting rules depending on the size of the acreage, and that would just be, it'd be at least uniform within a county. And with that, I would stand for questions and urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've just seen this, and I'm not 100% sure I fully understand what he's doing. But it seems to me that it's having the effect, the opposite of what the sponsor is seeking. With the amendment that we adopted going to the 35 acres, you've got a uniformity within the county. If you adopt this amendment, if I understand it, then in the large acre subdivisions, say the county went to 100 acres as the upper limit on that, you would be able to get ag land treatment in a subdivision for parcels of 100 acres or more, but you would, within the county, be able to get ag land treatment for parcels down to 35 acres within the large acre subdivision. But if you had such a parcel within a regular subdivision, you wouldn't be able to get the ag land treatment. And so you'd have a non-uniformity because that ag land treatment is in the bill, the law we enacted last year on the large acre subdivisions. So I would urge defeat of the amendment, and maybe we can have some discussions between now and third reading and trying to understand exactly what the sponsor of this amendment is trying to achieve and come out with something that will achieve what he's seeking to, because I don't think this does.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would speak against this amendment, and not only the uniformity issue within the county, depending on which type of subdivision and what the county commissioner may elect to do, but what about across the state? If you have one parcel treated one way and another parcel treated another way, I think you create an inequity that may also have some constitutional problems with uniform and equal. And so I'm not sure what we're trying to get at here, and I would urge the body to defeat this. And maybe there's a way to accomplish it, because I think I understand what he's trying to say. If the county commissioners elect to do anywhere between 35 and 140, they shall use that number. But I think that creates some unintended consequences.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes a second time. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, and I'd be happy to visit with the sponsors on that. What we're trying to do, just to be clear, is last year in 18-5-316, we created the requirements for large acre subdivision permits, and ultimately what you've got in here is that we allowed the county by resolution to elect to apply the provisions of this article on a uniform basis to the sale or disposition of any land where the subdivision creates parcels that are 35 acres or larger and up to 140 acres. What we've done in this is we took the in the bill, what we did, what the amendment did to House Bill 10 is it took that and went from 140 acres all the way down to 35. It just seems to me that since we have an exemption that we're talking about for ag exemptions, that it ought to be the same across the board. So vote this up or vote this down, and I'd be happy to talk with the two senators. But ultimately, I think we need to continue to try and have this uniform with when we're dealing with these large acre tract subdivisions. So if you want to vote it down, that's fine. We'll visit and we'll see if we can come up with something that everybody understands. But that's the intent. Thank you, Mr. President.
The motion is on second reading, amendment number 1 to House Bill 10. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion failed. House Bill 10 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 16, second reading of the House Bill. Senator Vasey.
Yes, Mr. President. Yesterday there were a couple important questions asked on this bill, and I apologize to the body. I answered them less than adequately, and so we did ask the manager of the Consumer Health Services with the Department of Ag to do that. The first question was about locally grown. The department has no specific definition of that. It's usually left up to the individual stores, or in this case, it would be the farmer market manager. Some stores indicate they would only accept locally grown food if it comes from within 100 miles of the store. Others accept food if it comes within a day's drive of the market. For the purpose of farmer markets, there's a reluctance to say how many miles because you get into that argument whether it's 102 or 98. So they just say a day's drive, which gives quite a bit of latitude. So those farmer markets along a border or would be able to set their own parameters, really, about what produce they wanted in their market. The other question was, would you have to come to Cheyenne to get those permits? The answer to that is that the Consumer Health Services have 20 inspectors spread across the state that perform inspections at farmers' markets. There are also 6 local health departments with a total of 25 or 15 inspectors that may inspect farmer markets. So license can be obtained from these local inspectors. So I would imagine if one of your constituents asked about where that permit might be, a farmer market, you could refer them to the Department of Ag, and they would certainly get that information. So that, I hope, clarifies those questions.
Second reading of the bill. Let them read it first. We'll have the second reading first, then I'll call in.
Cottage food industry.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday there was also a question asked on House Bill 16 concerning not potentially hazardous food, because over on page 4, the provisions of subsection A do not apply to food operators or kitchens in private homes that prepare food that is not potentially hazardous. I also went to the Department of Ag, the same department, and potentially hazardous food, time temperature control for safety food, means a food that requires time temperature control for safety to limit pathogenic microorganisms growth or toxin formation. An example, an animal food that is raw or heat treated, a plant food that is heat treated or consists of raw seed sprouts, cut melons, cut tomatoes or mixture of cut tomatoes, or garlic and oil mixtures that are not modified in a way that results in mixtures that do not support pathogenic microorganism growth or toxin formation. And then it goes on for several pages. So the Department of Health makes what is potentially hazardous food very clear, Mr. President.
House Bill 16 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 22, second reading of the House bill.
Qualification for veterans tax exemption.
House Bill 22, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 26, second reading of the House bill.
Circuit Court Magistrate Jurisdiction.
House Bill 26, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 35, second reading of the House bill.
Election Judges.
House Bill 35, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 48, second reading of the House bill.
Game Bird Farms Raising Sage Grouse.
House Bill 48, having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 58, second reading of the House bill.
Responsibilities of injectors and poor space owners.
House Bill 58, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 75, second reading of the House bill.
Subdivisions Water Supply Study.
House Bill 75, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall it be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 80, second reading of the House bill.
Sequestration site unitization.
There is an amendment. Would the amendment please be read in?
House Bill 80, second reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 17.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this is just cleaning up some of the language to conform with our normal bill drafting standards. Mr. President, when I first came in the legislature, I was properly trained by Matilda Hansen and others on the House Judiciary Committee as to how we do things, and the training is carried over, and that's what produces this amendment. Be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Ross, Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, thanks to the good senator for some good catches that I apologize that Judiciary Committee would normally try to catch those, but we didn't in our, and urge your favorable consideration.
Question is on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 80. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. House Bill 80 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 90, second reading of the House Bill.
Wind River Reservation Education Program.
House Bill 90, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 165, second reading of the House Bill.
Adult Adoption.
House Bill 165, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. House Bill 67, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 67, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Tobacco Excise Tax, and Act relating to taxation of tobacco, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. Would the reading clerk read in the first amendment?
House Bill 67, third reading amendment number 1 to corrected copy to engrossed copy. Delete the Scott second reading amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I would move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 67. The reason for this amendment is after the second reading amendment number 1 was passed, that went out to the Department. The Department of Revenue figured out what we were trying to do, and ultimately there's a memorandum from the Department of Revenue from the head of the Excise Tax Division that I had distributed yesterday before this bill was laid back. Ultimately, the highlights of this is simply that if it's an ad valorem tax, it's simple because it's just on the price or the wholesale price, 20% of the wholesale price, or if it's a unit price, it's just the number of units sold times the whatever the price per unit that we have. When you try to, the amendment that this amendment is trying to delete did was it created a hybrid situation where it depended on whichever one gave more to the state. The problem with that is that the department and or the vendor would have to analyze and evaluate each product separately. And if you're near the price differential where that would switch from ad valorem over to unit pricing, ultimately, that could change inside a single reporting period. So while the concept was to insulate the department from insulate the state from any price increases and the prospect of inflation that may arise in the next few years, ultimately, it really does create a substantial, if not insurmountable, burden on the Department of Revenue to keep up with that. Out of the words used by the Department of Revenue was essentially complex at best and essentially unworkable. It would require the different wholesale prices of each product would have to be evaluated separately to determine which tax methodology would return the highest amount of tax. In order to validate the taxes owed, the tax return would create an analysis on each product individually and at each price change. Ultimately, as great a burden as this would be on the department, The memo says, I can't imagine the wholesaler being able to track this information, especially as prices change. So ultimately, you end up with a situation every time there's a price change, if there was a promotion, there was any kind of a sale, that may affect the ability to determine and administer the tax, both for the retailer or the seller of the wholesaler of the tax, or the, that owes the tax, or the where the excise tax is owed, or to the vendor, the person out there is trying to figure out what it is that they owe. So ultimately, while the intent behind it was laudable, we've created a situation where we just have an undue department an undue burden on the department to administer the tax as proposed through the amendment. And accordingly, I'd ask you your favorable consideration on this particular amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, understand, I hope you'll resist this amendment. Let's face it, we have extraordinary employees of the state in the Department of Revenue. This is a change. They have never tried this before, but they are, as I say, extraordinary employees. I have every confidence that they can implement this policy. It is good policy. It's good tax policy in terms of maximizing the revenue off of the category of other tobacco products. It's good policy in terms of the long-term goals to keep our state and particularly the young people healthy. And this isn't one of those, but there are some government agencies that resist change. And luckily, we're not dealing with one of those. We're dealing with a really first-class Department of Revenue. When they put their minds to doing something, they gather up bunches of money, and they're very good at it. And I think they can implement this amendment. They'll put their minds to it. They have a way of getting things done. And so I urge you to resist this amendment.
Mr. President, I too rise to urge you to resist this amendment. It's not particularly rocket science. You figure the tax the way you do it right now, 20%. You figure it on the unit basis, and you figure which one is higher. That's not overly complicated. Anybody can do it. You do have to look at the individual products, which is a little more complicated than it is now. But again, that's not particularly rocket science. And I think anybody with even a minimal skill with a computer could figure out how to do that quite readily and quite quickly. So I don't think it is a little more burdensome, but I don't think it's particularly more so. And frankly, without this amendment, this bill puts the state and state's revenue at considerable jeopardy in this area in the future, because it won't take much inflation, and this bill turns into a tax cut that just keeps on growing for the people that are selling this product, which is an addictive one, which is dangerous. And so I think that to have a responsible bill to pass, we need something like this.
Thank you, Mr. President. The very great, capable Department of Revenue that we laud and say they can do everything has told us they can't implement this tax. That's what they said. They can't implement it. It's too confusing. It depends on the vagaries of the changes of the price, which change all the time. You killed a bill yesterday that would have provided compensation for a vendor to figure taxes. But you do, and then you want to put a burden on them that every time a price is decreased, it flows into a different tax structure or what, jumping around. The Department of Revenue, the same one that you say is so great, says they can't implement it. Okay, that's what the memo says. This is not a tax a decrease. It raises $800,000 as the bill is right now. I don't call that a tax decrease. And prices in this area are going down because of reduced consumption, and they're trying to gain market share, so they're lowering prices. It's a commodity. Now, there's other amendments behind this that raise taxes. Vote for them.
But it's got all jumbled up here, and you have taken an $800,000 increase in taxes that's going to hit the entry-level moist snuff tobacco and act like it's some kind of a communist plot or something. What it really is, there is a lot of fighting between companies going here, established companies versus upstarts. Who cares? We're going to get $800,000 more. We're going to help with the entry-level cheap snuff to raise that price. And if we want to raise more money next year, we can raise the tax again, or you can choose a couple of these amendments that are coming.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of the amendment. I do think we've jumbled some things up, and we need to get back to square one. I agree with the good senator from Lander in that that just simply is something that the Department of Revenue says they can't do for us. The other important thing is on cigarettes, we tax by the package. I don't see anything wrong with bringing this into line with moist snuff and doing the same thing. And as for, a continuing decrease in tax revenues, I have full confidence in this body to come back at a later time. If we need to put a little more tax on there, we can do that. But I think this is a good amendment. I think we need to pass it.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, for my second time, just to follow up on a couple of points, there's about 13 to 15 products out here that are affected by this bill that are known of. There's more products that come out all the time. One of the reasons two things I want you to keep in mind, and I would echo and emphasize the comments from the good senator from Lander. First of all, the second page of the amendment, second page of the handout that I had when I gave you the memo from the Department of Revenue, talked about that. Can they do that? Sure. If you give them enough staff and give them enough money, they can figure it out and they can figure out how to do it. If that's the way you want to go, they can certainly do that. But it seems to me that one of the great things about the tax is that it ought to be simple to administer. Second point I would make to you is, again, going back to the numbers, here we are haggling about what is 8% of the market. We're talking about 8% of the market, moist snuff tobacco. This is exactly how we administer over 88% of the market already through cigarettes. We don't do that for cigarettes for the same reason. There are all kinds of brands. If you had some hybrid thing, you'd be doing the same thing with cigarettes. And ultimately, the purpose of the bill wasn't raise taxes. The purpose of the bill was simply to create two things. One, to discourage entry level by raising price. Two, in my opinion, the main reason was to make it uniform, that we would tax tobacco uniformly. We would have over 90% of all tobacco now taxed uniformly on a unit basis, cigarettes being approximately 88% of that, and this another 8% on moist snuff tobacco. The other thing, if you go to the second page of the handout I gave you, the national share trends for moist snuff tobacco, the weighted average of these has gone down. It went up until 2004, and it's gone down steadily since 2004 to 2007. So the fact of the matter is that we're actually seeing price decreases at the wholesale level, which ultimately would put more and more of these into the unit level anyway. And if we have it come back, we need to come back and visit not only this to raise prices, to raise taxes on this if we think the unit price is too low or that inflation is eroding it somehow or robbing us of revenue. But ultimately, what you really need to do is talk about the real driver of this, which is cigarettes. And they should be treated uniformly in the same way. And we always have the ability to direct that, Mr. President. And so anyway, I would ask your we can move on to the other amendments now, but I'd ask your favorable consideration of this First Amendment. Thank you.
Question is on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 67. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Motion passed. Amendment passed. Okay, amendment number 2. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
House Bill 67, third reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy, page 5, line 1.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 67 and ask for your favorable consideration. Senators, I draw your attention to a handout that hit your desk here just a little while ago. This has kind of comparison of the different prices and the different tiers of the some of the products that are out there. The reason I bring the first part of this amendment, which decreases this from 50 to 60%, is on that bottom level or tier three, there's just a huge increase, 160, over 200% increase on taxes, and I felt that that was probably a bit unfair to do that and single out the lower tier. And so I thought for a period of 2 years we could bring this in at new tax in at 50 cents rather than 60%. So to keep it under 100% tax increase, I mean, that's 100% tax increase is a bunch, but at least it's not 200%. So that's what the first part of the amendments do, from going from 60 down to 50. Then after that, in 2012, it moves back up to 70 cents a pack. So, or an ounce. So you lose a little bit of revenue to start with, but you gain it back in a couple of years and increases the revenue after that. So this gives the body, I guess, a choice as to whether or not they feel over a 200% tax increase or over 100% tax increase is fair for some people, where other people don't get hardly any. And it also allows us to catch up in a couple of years and bring the taxes up. So that's what the amendment does. I guess vote it up, vote it down.
Senator Burns.
President, I'm actually a little confused by the intent of the amendment versus the intent of the bill. My understanding of the intent of the bill is to make it, frankly, more difficult for the entry-level snuff chewers. And so what this amendment seems to do is the exact opposite. Yeah, let's lower the tax on this so we can, you know, get them in and make it affordable for them. And then once they're hooked, then we'll raise the price on them. And I thought the intent of the bill was to actually discourage them from doing it in the first place.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, as we debated this bill in the interim, we tried to stay away from the social impacts of it, and the intent was to equalize taxation. So you could either take everybody from up here and take them all down, or you can take everybody from down here and bring them all up, and that was what the discussion in the interim was, and it was strictly equalization of taxation was, in the interim discussions, was the intent of the bill.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, and understand what this amendment does for those low-cost, entry-level Jew cans. This lowers the tax. Study after study shows that young people are particularly price-sensitive. They don't start out buying the high-priced green can. They start out with exactly what's directed at this amendment, the low-cost snuff. And you know, if that's what you want to do, lower the tax on that entry level. Pretty quick, they'll graduate up to the high price stuff when they get a good job, and then it won't matter. But that's what this amendment in effect does. It lowers the price on entry level of the most common way to get nicotine addiction.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had some discussion on this in committee. And, Mr. Chairman, make no mistake, we're going to have to revisit this issue in probably 2 years, because they are going to have other tobacco products that are going to have to be dealt with. We're going to have to revisit it anyway. Let's not lower the price now and make that automatic, because that isn't going to matter, quite frankly, in a couple of years. It isn't going to matter. Other tobacco taxes are going to have to be revisited. We had some examples in committee of some of the products that are coming online that aren't moist snuff. They're going to be taxed according to the other method, but we're going to have to come back and revisit the whole issue. And so let's leave the bill alone, which will give us more revenue for a couple of years, and then we can come back and visit the whole issue again, which we're going to have to do anyway in 2 years. So I would urge you to defeat the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Myers, for your second time.
Mr. President, it just lowers it from 60 cents to 10 cents for 2 years. So the effect of raising the lower price products and increasing that entry level price to defer the demand to first time users is still there, because you're having almost 100% increase in the price of the tax. You're going from a product that is $1.35 up to $1.85, or you have a product that goes from $1.35 to $1.95. So I think you still have the benefit of suppressing the demand because of the price on your lower level ones. And then in 2 years, you go to up to $1.95. Or actually to $2.05 if every wholesale prices stay the same and the tax goes up. Mr. President, we're always revisiting everything that we come back every year. So for an argument to say that don't vote for something because we'll be back next year, I think is kind of a hollow argument, because you could say that about every bill that we pass out of this body. So I think if you can look forward to the future. And in some areas, you might as well go ahead and provide for that. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
Question is on third reading, amendment number 2 to House Bill 67. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Third reading amendment. Reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 67, third reading amendment number 3 to engross copy, page 5, line 2.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 67. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is a relatively easy amendment to understand. In 2013, you just add an additional nickel, an ounce every year on January 1st. So the effect of that would be in 20 years you've increased the tax by $1 an ounce. In 10 years you'd have increased the tax by 50 cents an ounce. So if you're really, I think, serious about raising revenue, and you're serious about reducing or increasing the deterrent value of taxation on nicotine products in moist snuff tobacco to young kids, this would be an amendment that you would probably support. It doesn't say you can't raise it more if you feel like that's something that's appropriate to do in other years, in subsequent years, but it does take into account the inflation factor that might occur. If you look at the ad valorem tax that we disposed of, that had an automatic inflation factor in it if wholesale prices went up. We don't have that now. This basically is the automatic inflation factor. You're going up about 9% a year to start with. That's roughly about half of what the medical inflation rate is. So you probably should have went with 10 cents a year if you're going to keep up with medical inflation. But, Mr. President, that's basically what it is. It's an inflation factor adjustment, and it just allows for a nickel an ounce a year.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, first I'm going to call for the yeas and nays in this amendment. And then, Mr. President, I stand to speak for the amendment. It does provide a measure of inflation protection here. Your guess is as good as mine as to whether that's adequate or not. I suspect in the initial years it won't be quite, and then maybe it will become adequate over time. But I think it's important that we do have a measure of protection here. Otherwise, we're going to see the taxes go down and our tax policy wind up encouraging more consumption. I think that's a bad public policy. I think this does provide, it's not as elegant as perhaps some other means, but it is a means to provide some protection in this area against what inflation is going to do to our tax rate. So I'd urge its adoption.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, what the amendment is a price out smoking ban. If we live long enough, pretty soon everything will cost more. I guess probably the main reason I'm against the amendment, however, is simply that the purpose of 67, and I'm a new appointee to the Revenue Committee, and so if those who are on the Revenue Committee are longer can correct me, but my understanding is the purpose of 67, which was an interim joint revenue interim committee bill, was to bring a uniformity of taxation among tobacco products. There are the sources who use cigarettes tell me that there's 20 cigarettes in a pack. So cigarettes are taxed at 3 cents a piece. That's 60 cents, if my math's still right, 60 cents a pack for cigarettes. So now with the bills it is, you've got 60 cents a pack for a can of moist snuff tobacco. The purpose of the bill was to bring those in, and so now we end up with almost 98% of all tobacco being taxed at that same way. And if we do this, now we're going to again take 8% of the tobacco products that we tax this excise tax on, which is moist snuff tobacco. We're going to take 8% and we're going to jump it 5 cents a year, each and every year, without any further intervention. I guess if you're going to do that, if you wanted to do that, really, the white elephant in the room is cigarettes. Why wouldn't you do the same thing for cigarettes? And if that's where we're going to go, we can make that decision. But why would we do that same thing to cigarettes, which is, in and of itself, some almost 88% of all tobacco products? So, you know, in my mind, this makes the administration less uniform, defeats the purpose of the bill, which is to bring most of it into uniformity, and I would urge your defeat of the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Scott, for your second time.
Mr. President. Can't do it on cigarettes because we don't have a germane vehicle, and being the Senate, we have to wait for the other House to send us a germane vehicle. So we've got to deal with what we've got here. Frankly, listening to the lobby, I thought the purpose of the bill was to help one set of tobacco companies over another set and to provide the opportunity for a tax cut for some of the more expensive products once a little inflation had set in. I think that would be the practical effect of the bill if we pass it without amendment. This does provide us some inflation protection. It's a simple formula. Anybody could administer it. I think we ought to go ahead and adopt it.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're dealing here with 2013. Nobody knows what it is or whether it's fair or whether it isn't. Frankly, I don't care. I mean, if we could raise the tax where nobody would buy it, that'd be fine with me. But we are going to have to deal with it. Those of us who were in committee saw all the new inventive products that they're going to use, as the chairman of the committee indicated, to go ahead and have. They're going to have to be taxed differently. They're not moist snuff. They're not. Hey, it's a problem. I don't care about the increase, but we're talking doing something for 2013, and I don't think on this kind of a product that's necessarily appropriate. So I would urge you to leave the bill as it is out of committee and forget about this amendment as we did the other, and I won't belabor that, and let it go on, and then we can deal with the problem that's going to be there.
Senator Perkins, for your second time.
Thank you, and I apologize standing here for the second time because I didn't intend to do it. But ultimately, I believe that the implication is that somehow working in the lobby and talking with the folks that do this, that somehow that I may be bought. And if that's the implication, I do resent it. But the long and the short of it is this. This is going to affect competition among these tobacco companies. If you don't do this bill, then there's a competitive advantage to those who are low priced. If you do this bill, then there's a competitive advantage to those who are higher priced. There's no question about that. Ultimately, this bill raises the tax on all of them, so that all of them will end up with a higher priced product because of this tax. And so we can make it about competitive, we'll make it about the influence of lobbies if we want, but I don't believe that's the purpose of the bill. I don't believe that's what the Senate Revenue Interim Committee intended to do, and I don't think that they were persuaded by those who would want a competitive advantage. I think they looked at this as a way to uniformly tax excise taxes. This would be a germane bill because it deals with excise tax. If the intent was to do this on all taxes, it could have been done. So, again, we need to move forward on this thing, tax them the same, and let's move on with this.
Any further discussion? Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to say quickly in regard to this bill, and I'm just going to be somewhat repetitious. It was about uniformity. The bill is about equity. It was never the intent of the Revenue Committee to become social engineers and to drive the consumption one way or the other. There was a strong lobby on it. We tried to focus on this idea of uniformity and equity and avoid some of the other social issues. It is going to be revisited at some point in time when we start talking about, if you will, designer drugs, designer nicotine. Those are the things that are going to be visited in the future. We'll come back and do that. Those are things that we're not able to predict. So just briefly, I would say defeat the amendment, pass the bill, allow it to do what it was intended to do, bring uniformity, and in a couple of years come back and look and see what's on the market in regard to nicotine, not just tobacco products, and revisit the whole issue. But I urge you to pass the bill, defeat the amendment, and let's get on with it.
Senator Meyer, for your second time.
Mr. President, if I thought we could have a germane amendment here and bring cigarette taxes in here and make it a nickel a pack, and it was excise taxes, I would probably go ahead and do that. Then you'd have some uniformity. But I think what you're doing here, if you pass this amendment, you're giving an indication, I think, to of our tax policy that that we believe that. We need to have a tax policy that accounts for inflation. You need to have a tax policy that does reflect the costs associated with the medical expenses associated with these particular products, and it does give direction in the future about how we're going to handle the new designer drugs that are coming out as far as nicotine. So. I would hope that we would vote for this. It's reasonable of a nickel a can. I think that's a reasonable increase. I think it will take into account inflation. It is 2013. That gives plenty of time for the Revenue Committee to address cigarettes, to address the designer drugs, and in 2013 have a comprehensive plan. But as you know, we have one subject, one bill, and we have one opportunity, and that opportunity is now.
The question is third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 67. Will the amendment pass? Roll call by Chief Clerk.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper? DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Vasey?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 9 ayes, 21 noes.
By your vote, the amendment had failed. Back on the bill, are you ready for the question? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, obviously, one of the previous speakers, senators, misunderstood the tone of my remarks. I want to make it very clear that it was never my intention to insinuate or otherwise assert that he was in any way bought. That was not my purpose. And if he took it that way, I apologize. I want to keep things civil. I know he can't be bought. And I know sometimes things get going in the heat of debate. But I want to make it very clear to the Senate that it is not my intention to in any way assert that anybody was bought on this. I was really commenting on the strength of the drive from the outside.
Are you ready for the question, Senator Hastert?
Thank you, Mr. President. I know that we've heard a lot about this over the last few days, and there's been a lot of discussion. Probably everybody's mind is pretty well made up. I know that in looking over a University of Wyoming analysis on the different kinds of taxes, I just want to take one more stab at the fact that, you know, it's shown here that the ad valorem tax is a good tax, better tax on these products. It adjusts for inflation. The fact that the weight-based taxes on the premium products won't change. The price of the tier 2 and 3 products of the economical brands increase. It shows that total consumption depends on market value. The unit tax have a greater impact. It just talks about the ad valorem tax automatically adjusts for inflation. The fact that what we're doing here is a regressive tax. And I just am opposed to this bill and just think that we should vote this down, take a look at it better. I think that you're going to see, you might see an immediate increase in revenue, but on the long term, it's shown that these kind of taxes reduce revenues in the state. Other states that have implemented these kind of taxes have reduced revenues and are rethinking and relooking at this, and I think we should do the same and just not oppose this bill.
Senate File 67 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
DeCaria?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Vasey?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 20 ayes, 10 noes.
Senate File 67, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate,
House bill.
Oh, excuse me. We're on a House bill now. House Bill 67, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 67 had passed the Senate. Considerations of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are that order of business. Considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Massey.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 60. Would the reading clerk please read that?
House Bill number 60, sponsored by Representative Buchanan, Sex Offenses by Corrections Personnel, an act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It should be on. Is it on? Okay, there you go.
I got it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 60, Sex Offenses by Corrections Personnel. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 60, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and for a discussion of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I do.
Senator DeCaria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill was brought forward by a situation in Platte County where there were correctional personnel that were having inappropriate contact with prisoners. And when this happened, Mr. Chairman, what was found out is that there was a section that we thought was already in the law that was left out. And that section, Mr. Chairman, was in third-degree sexual assault. And this provision that would include correctional officers in that was just overlooked when the original statutes were put together. So, Mr. Chairman, really all this legislation is doing is including correctional officers in the statutes for third-degree sexual assault, where we thought it was already in the statutes, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment was just the other part of that that was overlooked, is that as it stands now, that marriage is not a defense in these cases. Mr. Chairman, the testimony was that, you know, the Department of Corrections does not put husbands and wives together, but, you know, sometimes in certain situations you may get, you know, people getting married in these correctional facilities, and people might use that as a defense. Mr. Chairman, this just makes it clear that that's not a defense in these situations. And so, Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment just puts that marriage provision in there so that it's clear that that's what's going on. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for questions on the bill or on the Standing Committee Amendment. With that, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on the amendment. Any questions, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Mr. Vice President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 60, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 60 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 150. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill 150, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Peace Officer Definition, an act relating to peace officers. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 150, Peace Officer Definition. For an explanation of the bill, I'll yield to myself.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you. What we found in the statutes is that when you look at 61-104J, you have a definition of a peace officer, including a detention officer who supervises a detainee while that person is convicted of a felony. And the odd thing about this is when you go to interference with the duties of a peace officer in 65204, if an inmate or was to assault a detention officer, beat him up, whatever, interfere with them in their duties, it was a violation if that person that was incarcerated was a felon. But it didn't cover if that person who was detained was a misdemeanor. So all this bill does in reference to 65204, which isn't in the bill, which is interference with the duties of a police officer, 65204B says that a person who intentionally, knowingly causes or attempts to cause bodily injury to a peace officer engaged in the lawful performance of his duties is guilty of a felony punishable by imprisonment for not more than 10 years. There's also A and B in that particular section. But it really shouldn't be determinative as to whether or not the person that's incarcerated is a misdemeanant or a felon. And that's all this bill does, and so I'd urge your favorable consideration.
We're on House Bill 150. Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor, also, I believe also includes those who haven't been convicted of anything who may be awaiting trial.
Okay. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Meyer.
I haven't tracked this in, but this has nothing to do with retirement and or things like that. It says there's no fiscal impact, but I'm wondering if there's any way that this changes it to, like, people who are detention officers for juveniles or something, whether that would allow them to get in the retirement system or not.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not really sure I understand your question. This bill has nothing to do with retirement system. Really only has to do with, if they're a detention officer, whether or not they're in the retirement program or not, I don't know. But this has nothing to do with that. All this has to do with is, you know, if somebody's doing something wrong to a detention officer, it shouldn't matter whether they're a misdemeanant or a felon. That's all that this deals with.
Any further discussion on House Bill 150? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, was interested in the discussion that this is more than just misdemeanants. When we're knocking out the convicted of felony provision, let me give you a scenario. The police bring in a drunk on Saturday night. Aforesaid drunk goes ahead and tries to beat up a detention officer. You've then transformed what was, with this bill, you transform what then was a misdemeanor relating to public intoxication to a felony. Is that what's going on here?
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, it would be separate offenses. You would have the first offense, which is the public intoxication or whatever, and then if the person who's brought in assaults or beats up the detention officer, that would be a separate charge. Now, that may be that it is a misdemeanor in and of itself, depending on the severity of it, or it could be a felony if it's severe enough. The real question all this bill attempts to get at is that it shouldn't make a difference when that person's brought in, if he's brought in for a misdemeanor or a felony. The question is, you know, that subsequent act will have to be charged based on the nature of those facts in and of itself, but it shouldn't depend on the underlying charge that they were brought in for.
Further discussion. We're on House Bill 150. Seeing none, all those in favor of Mr. Vice President's motion that when Committee of the Whole rises a report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 150, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 150 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is 113. Would the House reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 113, sponsored by Representative Buchanan, Careless Driving, an Act Relating to the Regulation of Traffic. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I request that they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 113, Careless Driving, and to explain this bill to us. I yield to Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you House Bill 113, Careless Driving. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, many of your municipalities have a lesser driving offense called careless driving. What this bill will do is allow that lesser charge to be utilized on our highways and so forth, or in the county, for driving offenses. Right now, the current state of the law, say a highway patrolman couldn't charge somebody with careless driving, may have to charge them with reckless driving. This gives them a lesser charge to fit the circumstances. For those, like for me in Cheyenne, we have a municipal ordinance of careless driving. And we're pretty much aware of that charge. But if you got out to the border of the city, that charge may not be available to somebody where your actions really don't rise to the level of charging with a higher driving violation. So careless driving is defined in 31.5.236, and that is basically the bill, to allow law enforcement to charge something lesser, which is nice to see every now and then, than something greater. This isn't a felony, and would urge your favorable consideration.
Any discussion of House Bill 113? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 113, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 113 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 78. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 78, sponsored by Representative Brown, Improvement and Service Districts, an Act Relating to Improvement and Service Districts. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. Excuse, Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of House Bill 78. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 78. There were no standing committee amendments for explanation of the bill. I yield to the Vice President.
And for something different, Mr. Vice President.
Tony. You want me to dance here, too? I can do it.
Please don't.
The One thing I've learned in this whole process as being vice president is how many people come to you and ask you to co-sign their bills. The question. In any event, this is a simple bill. It goes in, and all this bill does in your improvement in service districts, in the powers of that district, expand the power to, as you see on page 2 of the bill, to include maintenance and reconstruction of any street, road, so forth. And that's what it does. And it goes, there's a whole litany of about 21 different powers. This expands power number 17.
Any discussion of House Bill 78? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 78, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 78 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 8. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 8, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Certified Public Accountants Revisions, an act relating to certified public accountants. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hester, Johnson, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a do pass recommendation for House Bill 8. For further explanation of the bill, I yield to Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. I just wonder if we ought to maybe have that read in at this time and go ahead and do that.
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 8, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copies, page 2, line 8.
Senator Case.
He can go ahead and move the amendment if he wishes.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 8. Mr. Chairman, this is just changing a few words and language around on page 2 and page 9 and 22. Just to kind of update the language in the bill, and that's a fairly simple change. I ask for your favorable consideration.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. House Bill 8, Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and fellow senators, this is a 32-page bill, but I will try to move through it just as quickly as I possibly can to preserve whatever balance I can here today. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 8 is a Certified Public Accountants Revision, this is called. House Bill 8 is a committee bill, which was the result of a joint corporations interim committee assignment by the Management Council. The committee was assisted also by the Wyoming Society of CPAs and the Wyoming Board of CPAs in preparation of the bill. House Bill 8 incorporates changes to Title 33, Section 3 of the statutes in order to provide practice mobility standards for CPAs in Wyoming. What that means is that so that the CPAs in Wyoming will be able to operate in other states, kind of like what we call reciprocal agreements, but these are a matter of fact, they wouldn't have to even obtain a license in another state, and it would be also if they meet certain substantial equivalent standards. The practice mobility is the ability, like I say, of the CPA to gain a practice privilege outside of their resident state without getting an additional license in another state if the requirements under which they receive their license are substantially equivalent under the statutes in Title 33. Currently, the Wyoming Board of CPAs does not have jurisdiction over out-of-state CPAs that perform work for Wyoming businesses and citizens. This bill gives them express jurisdiction over out-of-state CPAs, and Wyoming CPAs will not automatically have practice privileges in other states unless we adopt these mobility statutes. Mr. Chairman, I'll now go through the bill. Fellow senators, starting on page 2, section 33, 3302, and continuing to the bottom of page 4 on line 22 are all the revised new definitions, revised and new definitions, needed to accommodate the mobility statutes. And I'll just cover a couple of those definitions, the ones that are probably more important to the to this bill itself. On page 2, there's a definition for attest services. Now, this was actually in the original statutes, but has been modified from the current statute for language by rearranging and separating out the different types of engagements under the three separate sections, capital A, capital B, and capital C. And in section D on page 3, it talks about the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. Now, this is something that a lot of us have been hearing in the news lately, and this has to do absolutely with the federal board, and is better known as the SEC or the Enron regulators. On page 4, subsection 14, Romanet 14, is the new definition of substantial equivalency that includes terminology for comparable rules of other jurisdictions concerning the educational examination experience requirements. And these are the substantial equivalencies. On page 5, in section 33.3108, little a, and Romanet 5, adds practice privilege or mobility terminology that is used throughout the Act, and now this will be defined in rule and reg. At the bottom of page 5, we pick up section 33.3109 that carries all the way over to page 12. And several items are covered under this section, including the following. Section 5 is the grandfathering clause that covers the old educational track with just the BS degree and gives the sunset date of January 1, 2012 for the use of this track versus the new track requiring a BS degree and 150 hours of college credit, which starts on January 1, 2012. If I can get my paper together, we'll get scarce of it. Section D then moves the fee setting process from statutes to rules in accordance with the current statutes on 33.1.201. And the same process is covered in section F and G on pages 7 and 8 for inactive and retired license status. Now, this is in statute 33.1.201 that allows for this to happen, and it's always been done by statute before, and now we do it by rule and reg setting the fees because they change over the years. Section E, lines 16 and 20, add the word certified, which was simply an amendment that was requested by the public accountants because the PAs didn't want to be known as CPAs, and the CPAs didn't want to be known as PAs. So that's that change. Section H, at the top of page 9, brings the practice privilege wording to accommodate the new mobility statutes. And section K on page 9, through line 17 on page 11, addresses the requirements for mobility for foreign applicants. Now, these are meaning CPAs from foreign countries, not from other states as we use in corporate law. Page 11 and 12, subsections O and P, is a waiver provision that may be granted by the board for a person that does not meet the substantial equivalency standards. Page 12, section 33.3115, beginning on line 17 through page 13, line 18, covers the grandfathering of certificates under the prior law. Section 33.3116, little a, most of this subsection has been deleted since this language is no longer needed under the new mobility statutes. Starting on page 14 in line 8 and over to line 4 on page 24 is actually the meat of the mobility statutes. You can see these are new statutes. They're all underlined. Page 16, Romanet 3 little I, describes how the disciplinary action and service of process will be handled. That's important because now you have these CPAs going in and out of the various states, and there has to be a way, if there's a problem, to be able to have service of process, and it explains to you in that section how that's to be done in case there's problems. Section Romanet 4 on page 17 requires that an individual CPA that performs audits is listed under subsection A, or capital A, cap B, and cap C of this section. which talks about operating under a CPA firm permitted under Section 33118 of this Act. If you're operating under a firm and from another state that is permitted in this state, then this comes into effect. Page 17, little b, provides that investigations, complaints, and disciplinary actions will carry over from one state to another. And now this is very important, because if you're disciplined in another state or have problems or are under investigation, then it carries over to all the states that you might be operating in through this Mobility Act, and that's very important. Page 19, 2i, provides for an exemption from the 2012 educational requirements under certain conditions, and it lists those conditions under that section. Page 20, Section 33318 through Section 33319 on page 24 addresses mobility standards for ownership and the required permitting for CPA firms operating in Wyoming. Even though that the CPAs have mobility and able to change around from place to place, the firms, if you're operating as a firm in Wyoming, you still have to be permitted here as the as a firm. Page 25, Section 33120 to page 32, line 12 is conforming language except for subsection little e on page 30, which allows any CPA firm to provide services except for audits without mobility permit. In other words, you can do compilations, you can do reviews, but you cannot do an audit without following this section. Section 2 on lines 14 and 15 are the repealers, and provide the repealed statutes in 33.3118B through Romanet 9 through 12. These sections of 33.118 cover public accounting firm language that is no longer needed under the revised mobility statutes, and if you want to go back and find those, they're actually in 33.3118 on page 20 and 21. And, Mr. Chairman, that pretty well covers it. I see my friend.
Discussion on the House bill? Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to be sure, if you look at page 3, on line 21, we talk about a licensee. It's a definition of license. And it says that they are a CPA or any other comparable document. And I worry about that, because you get over to page 14 when you talk about someone from out of state coming in, they have to be a CPA. And I wonder if there's a conflict there. And the other thing, Mr. Chairman, and I didn't find it in here, we don't change the way it's treated if for some reason a practicing CPA here failed to send in their license renewal as at a certain date, that they have to go through the whole process again, that they're not given any kind of a grace period.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer the good senator from Fremont County, the reason the license definition is there on page 3, which would actually ultimately compare with the one on the CPA situation on page 14, is because there are some states that have different names. Instead of calling them certificates, they call them licensees or licenses rather than certificates. And that's just kind of to bring in the fact so you can have, I said, some commonality, I guess, in this. And that was the reason for that definition of even putting the word licensee in there. I think we call them certificates here in Wyoming, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see. And I wrote the other thing down, and then I can't read my writing, Mr. Chairman. What was that?
Yeah.
Oh, great, yeah. Oh, Mr. Chairman, that would be covered under the rules and regs, how that would be handled. So any type of those fees, because the reason that is because, if you remember right, the fee structure is being changed now from statute into rule and reg. So any time, usually what those do, those require some additional fee that they charge you, a penalty fee or whatever, for being late. And that would also tell you how long you could go without having to recertify.
Senator Bebop.
Mr. Chairman, that's really important, because we have a situation under the Dental Practice Act where they changed this legislature changed the law a couple of years ago and didn't specify in there that you would not be able to get your license. They just said you shall renew it by a certain date. But if you didn't, now they've taken a position, both the Attorney General's office and the
and the attorneys representing the dental board that if you do that, you lose your license, which is ridiculous in my opinion. I just want to be sure of that. And then that language, I mean, you're either a CPA or you're not. I won't worry about that. If that's why it's in there, it seems to me that we just got to be really careful. I understand that they have to have all those requirements, but, you know, they are a CPA, and that's what they do.
We're on House Bill 8. Any further discussion? Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, as far as the failure to renew your licenses, I'm sure if there was maybe somebody would like to bring an amendment to add that to the statutes, that would probably be okay. But I think that would really be covered under the rules, but that would be all right.
Any further discussion on this fine House bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 8, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 8 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 221.
House Bill number 221, sponsored by Representative Throne. Property Tax Appeals 2, an act relating to property taxation. It was referred to Committee number 3, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 221, Property Tax Appeals 2. Mr. Chairman, we do have a standing committee amendment. Could I get it read in at this time?
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
House Bill 221, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 3.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I would also move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 221. Mr. Chairman, I'll deal with that as I go walk through the bill. It is primarily a cleanup, but I can explain both at once. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 221 goes to an appeal by a homeowner when they're going to their county commission as sitting as the Board of Appeals for property tax. And what it does is it tries to level the playing field. Normally when you go to court, you kind of think that both parties walk in and it's just about even. And then the Board of Equalization decides on the merits and comes down on the proper side. But over the last couple years, we've had really three cases that were decided by the Supreme Court or by Boards of Equalization that put into play a term called the presumption of validity. And that's just a real fancy way of saying that the assessor is presumed to be right. That whatever value an assessor makes, when you walk in the door, it's presumed that the assessor was right. As you go to your Board of County Commissioners, sitting as the Board of Equalization, they have court precedents that says the assessor is right. That's a fairly high standard in terms of legal proceedings. And what this bill does is tries to even that up a little bit in terms that the person making the appeal walks in and they're on even footing. And the way we do that, really the gist of the bill is on page 2, starting with line 1, subparagraph 4, in any appeal to the board authorized by this section, and this is your appeals, the taxpayer may present any credible evidence, and what it says now is including expert opinion testimony, to rebut the presumption in favor of a valuation asserted by the department. And what it's talking about there is that when you walk in, you can go ahead and present evidence. And the Board of Equalization has to take that as an equal starting point. The Standing Committee amendment, we did a little bit of cleanup. We excluded on line three the words including expert opinion testimony. We're talking about credible evidence. That's sufficient. Again, the Standing Committee amendment went down under the 3913-109 taxpayer remedies. That's your right of appeal under subparagraph B. And on lines 13 and 14, deleted the same words. What we're really talking about is credible evidence. Mr. Chairman, at this point, I'd like to try and answer any questions we have on the Standing Committee amendment, which is the elimination of those words on line 3 and on lines 13 and 14, and I'll try and answer questions on them.
Any questions on the amendment, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, a little concerned about this. Is the practical implication of this going to be that somebody's going to argue that you can't bring expert witnesses in or can't bring in a written opinion by an expert? Is that what's the most... I guess it was included in the original bill for a reason. And are we running some risk that you're going to be excluding that kind of work?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To add to the tall senator from Natrona County's concerns, I have along the same lines, when we already have a presumption in favor of evaluation, and now the amendment would seek to take away expert opinion, I wonder if that means we can't have a neighbor, we can't have a block party, a situation up in my home district. They went door to door and discovered that nobody on the block received a 73% increase in their taxation. And I'm just concerned that maybe that would exclude that kind of situation would be interested in that.
Okay, we're on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to go to the fiscal note because at the bottom of the fiscal note, and this is on the amendment, it says the language of the proposed provision 3913-109B simply restates what is the current state of the law. It says a taxpayer and county board of appeals allowed to present any credible evidence, including expert testimony, and even hearsay as long as it is probative, trustworthy, and credible, and then it cites Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act. I guess I would be curious to know what the sponsor of the bill's thoughts are on that particular part, because I think we're talking about taking that out.
Okay. We're on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Any further discussion on that amendment? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and excellent questions. First of all, let me go down through them in order. By taking credible evidence out, it doesn't restrict it in any way. I'm not sure exactly where that phrase comes from, but it sounds great. But what by taking those words out, it opens up broader the evidence that you can bring to the Board of Equalization, which leads me to answer the next question from my colleague from Natrona County, and it would open it up. For example, to neighbors coming in and saying, look, here's a real disparity in the tax assessment in a what tax assessors call neighborhoods. That's where they group sets of property of like kind and age and all those things. So this does open that up. They are allowed to come in then. That in fact, is credible evidence. In terms of the state of the law, I'm really on my best behavior today, that is what the law says. My colleague from Park County is exactly right. The unfortunate thing is that we have had, starting in 1962, a couple others here in the 80s, decisions by courts that have changed this. In other words, it's not the statute that we're that we're kind of directing this legislation to, it is to, in fact, the wisdom of folks who put on black robes when they go to work in the morning. They've changed this over the years, and they've changed it, we believe, to the detriment of our property owners in the state of Wyoming. So that's kind of the reason the bill is here, is because we've got wise people making decisions. I think I've answered all the questions on the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the standing committee amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Chair is in doubt of all those in favor of the amendment. Please stand. All those opposed to the amendment, please stand. The amendment fails. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? House Bill 221. Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 221, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 221 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next House Bill for our consideration is House Bill 72.
House Bill number 72, sponsored by Representative Berger, County Jails Release of Information, an act relating to county jails. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 72, County Jails, Release of Information. There is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 72, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'm trying to remember who's carrying the bill. Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sure didn't want to stand up, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Chairman, right now, the Wyoming Department of Corrections can release the information regarding any event individual who is committed to their supervisory custody to essentially the victims of what these individuals that are incarcerated did. However, county jails cannot, according to statute. There are county jails in the state who do it anyway, just using their daily logs when somebody comes up, when somebody contacts them and calls. What this will do will allow the county jails to input into the state database over in the building just to the north of us also. And then the victims can call and find out what the status of the offender is, where they are, et cetera. Like that. You want to cover the amendment? Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would yield to the senator from Laramie County who sits next to me because she sponsored the standing committee amendment.
Okay, well, we're now going to discuss the amendment. Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, has the amendment been moved?
Yes, it has been.
Okay. What the amendment does, all it does is it says that except for juveniles charged with the status offense as defined by WS, and it goes on with the definition of the status offense. The status offense is that offense that if an adult did the same action or the same thing, it would not be against the law, and that includes smoking and some other things. So if this child was in the jail and had been charged with a status offense, then that information could not be released. Now, remember, minor in possession is not considered a status offense under our current statute. So if a minor was charged with minor in possession, this would not cover that. This is only for status offenses.
And the amendment also changes the effective date. Any further discussion of the amendment? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, okay, so I understand what the amendment does. What happens when the juvenile is charged with an offense that's not a status offense? And I guess MIP would serve as a good example. Is that name still released?
Senator Dockstetter, did you want to go right ahead?
Chairman, along the same lines as Senator Scott, then if we've got a different charge, then if we could have some clarification, does it put it to any rest, any concerns that law enforcement might have on releasing the information?
Senator Sessions?
Mr. Chairman, the interesting thing is if he was being held in the jail and was being charged as an adult, that information could be released. What if he was a juvenile and charged in the juvenile court? In juvenile court, then all of those statutes under our juvenile court kicks in, and that's confidential. That protects him. That's the confidentiality statutes that we have in our juvenile court. So if he was charged with a felony as a juvenile or charged in juvenile court, that could not be released because he would be charged in the district court under the juvenile statutes that govern the juvenile court within the district court. But if he's being held in jail for a status offense, That's the goofy things that sometimes kids do, that if an adult did it, it is not against the law. And so if he's being held for whatever reason under that, then what this amendment says, that if it's a status offense and he's just being held and charged, and status offenses usually are charged in municipal court and sometimes in circuit court. They don't go up to the level of the juvenile court within the district court. And I see this puzzled look on your face, and I understand that because it took me years to understand how these play into each other. But all this does is if you pick a kid up for some status offense that he did, and he's sitting there in jail like he's charged in municipal court, then you're not going to release his name to the public for smoking on school grounds or whatever things that he did, or smoking down the street or whatever. But if he's charged as an adult, you can release his name. But if he's charged as a juvenile under the juvenile offenses, under Title 14, where all the play of the juvenile court comes into, then all of that is confidential anyway. This just goes to if that kid is being held in jail for a status offense.
Let the record show the chairman did not have a puzzled look. Any further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on House Bill 72. Any further discussion? Senator Vasey.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I know I'm supposed to read the bill, but I don't want to. Could somebody, the sponsor of this, explain, you know, when you're incarcerated in the correction system, then you're guilty. I mean, you're proven guilty. You're judged guilty, and so you're guilty. So that information, you know, should be let out. But there's also the possibility that when you get sent to jail or picked up and get sent to jail, there's still some kind of a presumption of innocence. And at what time does your name get in the paper because you're guilty? Now, this morning we passed a good one, because if somebody picked me up and I was innocent, I'd probably pop them. Now I'm a felon, you know, so we've taken care of that. But what if I am innocent? What if there was just another big dumb guy that looked overweight, 70, and they picked him up, or he was a desperate criminal, I'm not. So I'm in the county Cusco, and my name gets in the paper, or whoever wants it. And I'll tell you, more serious than that, though, I understand the victims' rights on this, and I sympathize with those, but I went to a dog and pony show that the victims' rights people put on in Rollins, and they had this fancy list of how quick you could get into that, and I asked about one name on it, and come to find out it was a woman, and she was innocent, you know, but her name was bigger than life on what do you call these little, you know, when you have the thing that the computer shows on the wall. So I just wonder about sometimes about the presumption of innocence.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Page 2 of the bill says the information regarding any individual who is or has been committed to the supervision or custody of the department or county jails, and then 3 little I talks about any conviction for which the individual was committed to the supervision or custody of the department or county jail. So they are convicted. According to this, they are convicted. And little IV, sentencing information regarding any conviction for which the individual was committed to the supervision or custody of the department or the jail. So, Mr. Chairman, these are people that have been convicted and they've been sentenced. And if the knowledge is public, if they're in the penitentiary for a felony, why can't it be public if they're in the county jail for a misdemeanor?
Any further discussion of House Bill 72? Seeing none, all those in favor of when the committee rises a report of the Vice President of motion that the that House Bill 72 do pass committee of the whole, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 72 has passed committee of the whole. The next House Bill for our consideration is House Bill 74. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 74, sponsored by Representative Brown, Water and Sewer District Maps, an act relating to water and sewer districts. It was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, report back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert and Johnson, excuse Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I have to look. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 74. There are no standing committee amendments, and I think I'm the one carrying this bill. So, Mr. Chairman, I think I better explain it. This particular representative gets me in a lot of trouble, that's for sure. Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with the issue of maps that are filed with the Department of Revenue after a city annexes a portion of a district. And if you look at the old language, it says, upon the annexation of such territory, the subscribers of the service of such districts shall continue to be served by the districts. The taxing power and authority of the districts shall continue and shall be in addition to any taxing authority in an annexing city or town. The situation arose where the Department of Revenue, they filed a map that showed the overlapping authorities. They sorted out all the taxing, and there was no taxing basis in the annexed territory. And there was no way for the Department of Revenue to say that this district was compliant. And so what we're trying to say, fix the loophole in the law by saying if they file a properly filed map showing the overlapping authorities shall be deemed compliant with the provisions of this statute, Mr. Chairman. That's all it does. It doesn't change any taxes, but it just gives a finality to say you are compliant because otherwise you're not compliant when there is overlapping territory.
We're on House Bill 74. Any discussion of the House bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 74, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 74 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 135. Would the reading clerk please read it?
House Bill number 135, sponsored by Representative Childers, Recreational Safety Act Amendments, an act relating to the liability of owners of land. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Coe, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 135, Recreational Safety Act Amendments. There are no committee amendments. There are no standing committee amendments. There are no appropriations. And for further explanation of the bill, I ask you to call on the man from Cody.
Well, not seeing him, I'll call on Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 135 comes as a result of a constituent of mine that lives between Cody and Powell and provides a easement and a parking area for fishing access, actually across his land. What this bill does is only go in and limit that landowner's liability under the Recreational Safety Act. You'll see on page 2 where we go through the definition, the laundry list of sport and recreational opportunity, saying that there's an inherent risk, for instance, if you're horseback riding, skiing, or whatever it might be, and just inserts at the bottom on page 2, line 8, includes the use of private lands for vehicle parking and land access related to the sport or recreational opportunity. All the bill does limits the liability of that generous landowner that provides the easement and a parking area for the benefit of the public. I'd ask for your favorable consideration of the bill.
We're on House Bill 135. Any discussion of the House bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 135, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 135 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 137.
House Bill number 137, sponsored by Representative Mercer, videotape depositions minors, and act relating to criminal procedures. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Ross, and Session. Excuse, Senators Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your continued pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 137 and yield the floor to the good Senator from Natrona County.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your consideration today, House Bill 137 does something that is actually an oversight probably from some actions we took 2 years ago. Right now, if you have a minor who's a victim of a sexual assault under some of the old laws, you could videotape the minor in deposition and take that in, and that would be admissible, and it would not, that way you wouldn't, the minor wouldn't necessarily have to come in and testify in court and be resubjected to some of the trauma associated with those types of activities. 2 years ago when we came back in and did the Adam Walsh rewrites, we added a number of sexual assault cases for minors, specifically 62314 through 62317, and which is first degree sexual assault of a minor through fourth degree sexual assault of a minor. So in those serious cases, we're just extending that what's already been in the law to allow a minor to have a videotaped deposition and avoid direct appearance under the right circumstances and under the discretion of the judge. We extend that to those other crimes so that we don't, again, avoid the victimization of the minor a second time. Urge your favorable consideration. Would stand for any questions. Thank you.
We're on House Bill 137. Any discussion of the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Mr. Vice President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 137, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 137 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 106.
House Bill number 106, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Firearm Ownership, Domestic Violence Offenses, an act relating to criminal procedure. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 106, and for an explanation of the bill, I yield to the good senator from Gillette.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're moving so quickly this morning, it took me by surprise that we got this far. House Bill 106, Firearm Ownership Domestic Violence Offenses. A couple of years ago or so, we changed our expungement laws where it had to do with domestic violence. And the object of that was because the feds had said if you are convicted of even a misdemeanor in domestic violence, you lose your right to firearms. So we changed our laws to say there was an expungement process where you could get it back just for that reason. Well, the Department of Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms didn't take kindly to us doing that and said it superseded federal law. And you can't do that. So what this bill does is go out to the bottom of page one, and a person has pleaded guilty or nolo contendere to or have been convicted of a misdemeanor under Wyoming statutes, so forth and so forth. Are those same misdemeanors arising out of the same occurrence or related course of events may petition a convicting court for an expungement of the records of conviction. And then we strike for the purpose of restoring any firearms rights lost. And that was a very big sticking point with the BATF, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And then it's subject to the following limitations, and we changed at least 1 year. It's been changed to 5 years have passed since the expiration of the term of sentence imposed by the court, including any period of probation or completion of any programs. And then under double I, other than convictions, and we struck arising out of the same occurrence or related course of events and added for which an expungement is sought. So other than convictions for which an expungement is sought under this section. And then the big part that we struck, which the BATF had real issues with, was Section K. We struck an expungement granted pursuant to the section shall only be used for the purpose of restoring firearm rights that have been lost to a person convicted of misdemeanors. And then another issue they had was that nothing in this section shall be construed to affect the enhancement of penalties for second or subsequent convictions of misdemeanors under the laws of this state. In other words, we were making this like expungement light. And they said, somebody has to have a total expungement before you can get your firearms rights back. We're not making a light version of this and then still keeping the records that can be used later against this person to enhance future penalties for other crimes. You have to clean it up, match the federal rules where domestic violence takes away your rights to bear arms, and you can't have this expungement that just is done so you can get your firearms rights back, but your record still is existing. So they had several issues. From the Attorney General letter, this is the Tenth Circuit Court, had ruled on this and found it to be illegal. And so we had only given away one to a person convicted and expunged under these rules. We had given one carry and conceal permit. DCI withdrew that after the Tenth Circuit Court came up with this, and they held back on ever giving out carrying concealed permits, waiting for particularly this piece of legislation to pass because BATF was saying and the feds were saying we're not going to recognize them. So unless we clean up our legislation, as this bill does, to bring it within compliance of the federal regulations, all our carrying concealed permits were suspect. And not only that, we allowed to use carry and conceal permits as a form of verification. When you go to buy a piece of when you buy a gun, you do not have to show what is the correct word? Anyway, your first ID. If you have a carry and conceal, it's good enough to get your permit and buy a gun. Without this piece of legislation, BATF was going to ignore that and say that we're all suspect on all our permits issued in Wyoming, and so we need to clean it up. Yes, you don't like to comply in this manner to something the federal government is, I would say, pushing down upon us or forcing us to do, but that's where it stands right now, and unless you want all carry and conceal permits to be suspect by the federal government and possibly be revoked or not honored, we need to change this, and I ask for your favorable vote on this bill.
We're on House Bill 106. Further discussion? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question. What if you're in a situation where before we passed a law that they said they didn't like and we stopped doing the concealed weapons permit, what if you had applied before that and you went to the through the federal district court and you tried to have your records expunged, but because of the national or because of the federal law, they took that away? Is that person now in a non-law land and there's nothing you can do about it, or will this in some way, shape, or form help him because of the five-year provision you've got in this proposed legislation?
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman. The other question I have is, I'm not sure, do we have reciprocity on carry and conceal? And if we do have, would this affect that? I just don't know about reciprocity on carry and conceal.
Senator Case.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the one that caused all these problems, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a few years ago we passed a law that allowed for limited expungement. And the issue there was, we in Wyoming decided that we wanted to keep a record of the number of times this had happened so that we could identify and track repeat offenders, so that bad apples indeed would not get their records expunged. So we came up with this notion called expungement for the purposes of. And we did do our research on that. We found that expungement meant different things in different jurisdictions. But so we had expungement for the purposes of, and we had a one-year waiting period. And then they had to have good behavior and all sorts of things, but they got an expungement only for the purposes of getting their firearms rights back. So if they did it again, though, we would have a record of that. We'd have the record of the priors. Well, we lost in court. We just flat out lost in court. So we do indeed need to do something with this bill. The trade-off in this bill is that you're getting rid of the limited expungement. You're making a complete expungement. But you're waiting 5 years. A person's got to have 5 years of good behavior. I think that's probably an appropriate way to come down. The issue about federal court, this doesn't happen in federal court. This is about Wyoming court. You have a very difficult time even get a federal court to hear a case about returning firearms rights because the BATF has a procedure for returning firearms rights. It's in the law. You can follow that procedure, but you get a letter from the BATF, and they say that we've received your letter. You indeed may merit the return of firearms rights, but the U.S. Congress has never allowed us to spend our budget to do what they told us to do, so you're in a catch-22. That's really why we need this bill. There are a few cases that have gone to federal court. There's one called the Hayes case, and we're going to have another bill that was discussed in Judiciary this morning that allows for that maybe perhaps creates a little different statute to bring charges in this area. It's a really complicated area. In terms of reciprocity, we in Wyoming have been very generous about the issue of reciprocity with other states. Our concealed carry people have been very happy that we've had a broad interpretation, but that has changed very recently. Only in a matter of a few days, we have limited the reciprocity because our AG has sent out a memo and said, in essence, we're going to narrowly interpret the other states' laws with respect to reciprocity. If they don't exactly match Wyoming, we're not going to allow for reciprocity. And so our universe of a great number of states has dropped to about 8 states that we're going to recognize reciprocity with. And this is a brand new development, and people are hot under the collar about it. The gist of that reciprocity issue seems to hinge on substance abuse offenses that are in Wyoming law prohibit you from having concealed carry, but that same requirement may not be at the same level in other states. That seems to be the rub. That's as much as I know. In the end, I think you should pass this bill. The trade-off is about 5 years versus where we had 1 year and a complete expungement. So what happens is after 5 years, somebody could have a repeat offense. And literally, you could get the expungement and it all could repeat. Where before we'd said the expungement is only for the purposes of getting your firearms rights, and we had a one-year requirement. I hope that helps to answer some of the questions. You know, I had reservations about this bill at first, but I really thought about it, and I do support this bill, and I hope you'll pass it.
Further discussion on House Bill 106? Seeing none, all those in favor of Mr. Vice President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 106, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 106 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 138.
House Bill number 138, sponsored by Representative Madden, Property Tax Refund Program, and Acts Relating to Taxation and Revenue. It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You heard a reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report, do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 138. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill number 138, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy. Page 2, line 9.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move standing committee number 1 to House Bill 138. And, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'll deal with it as I go through the bill and show where it goes.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, what this does, we've now had a year or so to track the property tax refund program. And this starts to deal with some of the glitches that we found in that program. And it starts really on page 2, where we go in on line 9 after the word paid. And this is the amendment. We add with, and I'll quote, with any applicable interest and penalties, people come in and file for this, we want them to be paid up and square with the county. So that is the amendment. It's adding those words. When people go to apply for this, they have to pay not only the tax, but also the interest and penalties. Mr. Chairman, it goes on, and we're starting at the bottom of line 2 and over at the top, to the middle of line of page 3 on line 14. Mr. Chairman, what this goes to is the assets that they can have. We change that. Instead of two-thirds of the median household, it's three-quarters of the median household income for the county of residence or the state. What this amounts to is roughly $4,000 of increased valuation there when you compare it. And Mr. Chairman, the reason we bring that, when we start looking at why these requests are denied, 62% of them were denied because of that break-off in income, particularly as you get down to people that are living on limited incomes. A couple particularly, between the two of them, it makes a tremendous difference there. So that's what that's doing on the income limit. The second thing is on the asset limit, and this is down on page 3, lines 21, 22, and 23. And what we found is if you've got a... let's just the normal scenario, a couple, man and a wife. As they start looking at their when they start looking at their assets, in fact, they're qualified $100,000 for each one, for each spouse. If one dies, the way this is written currently, their assets can only be $50,000. In Wyoming today, a $50,000 house is virtually nothing. It's a shack. So what this does, it doubles it, and it's to address that situation where our feeling is with $100,000, that's not an elaborate home. Let me give you an example. Workforce housing, by and large in this state, is valued somewhere between 160 and 180,000. So if you've only got 100,000 in assets, you're not talking about somebody that's living like the Prince of Araby or anything like that. It's pretty limited, but it is to take care of that particular situation. Mr. Chairman, the other thing that I'll point out is over on page 4, we changed on lines, page 4, lines 5 and 6, and this goes to retirement accounts. Mr. Chairman, the way that this program is constructed now is if you're in a defined benefit program, that doesn't count against you in any way. But if you have an IRA, if you've saved all your life, you're penalized for that. And in fact, in today's society, we want to encourage people to save for their retirement. So we said, if you've been saving all those years you worked, we're not going to penalize you for that. We want to encourage that. So what this does is it says that an IRA won't count against you in when we start calculating your eligibility. The same reasoning goes on page 4, lines 9 and 10, in the medical savings account. More and more we're asking people to say, save up for your health care. And what the way the law is now, you got penalized. Whatever dollar amount you had in your medical savings account counted against you. When in fact, we want to encourage people to have medical savings accounts. So we said, okay, we're not going to count that against you. Mr. Chairman, the final thing is on page 4, line 12, the repealer. What the repealer does is it goes in and says we won't have a deduct. If you qualify for a veterans tax exemption, that is not deducted from your eligibility under the tax refund, the property tax refund. What was happening, in fact, is veterans would go in and apply, and they'd actually net virtually nothing because it's a deduct, whatever they would get under this program, but they get under the veterans, the two are a deduct. We're saying, no, if you're a veteran and you qualify in terms of the income specifications in the property tax refund, you can get them both. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill in a nutshell. I would try and answer any questions I can. We're on the Standing Committee Amendment, which is that if before you apply for this program, you have to have your taxes paid, and you also have to have all applicable interest and penalties. And I'll stand for questions on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Any discussions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the House Bill 138. Any discussion on the House Bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 138, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 138 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're doing so well, I almost hate to intervene, but with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and set again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion is passed. Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 327, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 19, Criminal Procedure Mental Evaluation, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill Number 20, Criminal Procedure, Administration of Antipsychotic Drugs. Ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill Number 11, Dogs Chasing Wildlife. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 2, noes 57, excused 1. House Bill 62, Charter School Law Amendments. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 59, excused 1. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 18th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee Number 1, Mr. President, message number 330. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 11. The House conferees are Representative Brown, Chairman, Representative Peasley and Shepperson. Message number 331, conferees appointed, Mr. President. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 62. The House conferees are Representative McComey, Chairman, Representatives Edmonds and Dan Zwanitzer. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 289, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 114, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Jennings, Massey, Von Fladern, Senator Coe, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 226, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 43, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Peterson, and Townsend, no, Senator Nicholas, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 91, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 18th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 252, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate be at recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon.
Announcements. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, the Revenue Committee, Committee Number 3, will meet tomorrow, February 19th, up in S-16 with a beautiful view at 30 minutes after noon recess to take up House Bill 283 engrossed, Taxation and Revenue Digital Products, House Bill 68 engrossed, Property Tax Homestead Exemption, and House Bill 215 engrossed, Tax Exemption for Renewable Resources.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow morning. We've only got two bills, so we're going to meet at 8 a.m. in S-19. The first bill is House Bill 39, engrossed, Population Determinations, Use of Federal Census. And then House Bill 279, engrossed, Statements of Consideration Review. Another exciting day in corporations, Mr. President.
Senator Von Platerman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today in S-13 to take up House Bill 125, Establishment of Highways, House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And heads up, and I apologize, for some reason some of our notices being kicked out of the Appropriations Committee on the computer-generated notices are not putting on or adding in the sponsors on the Senate side. So we're figuring out how to get corrected. So you might want to listen up to these to make sure that if you didn't get notice that you recognize any of these bills, that they're yours. But the Senate Appropriations Committee is going to meet at 1 o'clock today in S-13 to take up House Bill 46 engrossed, National Guard Medical Professional Retention Program. That's left over from this morning. We'll also consider a House Bill 47 engrossed, Commercial Signage on Highways, House Bill 96 engrossed, Railroad Quiet Zones. On adjournment, we'll take up House Bill 180 engrossed, Public Transit Account Funding, and House Bill 229 engrossed, Court Security Reimbursement. Thank you.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 20 minutes after 12 up in S-18 to take up House Joint Resolution 7, U.S. Constitutional Convention Repeal, and House Bill 295 engrossed Western States Energy and Environment Symposium.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow at 20 minutes after the noon recess up in S-14, where we will take up House Bill 286 engrossed, Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, House Bill 302 engrossed, Game and Fish Pioneer Fishing License, and House Joint Resolution 16 engrossed, Immigration Reform.
Senator Ross, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, on Friday at between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., there is a blood drive for Wyoming state legislators who might be willing to donate blood, and that will take place in the Hirschler Building in the atrium.
Senator Nicholas, did you have any? You have heard the motion that the Senate stand recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is in recess.